Welcome to Empire Building. I'm Wendy Papazan, and together with my four co-hosts, we bring you weekly unfiltered conversations about leadership, growing a big empire, and living on your own terms.
I'm Kimber Lovett-Minkiti. We are investors and wealth builders with over $75 million in combined net worth.
I'm Sarah Reynolds. We are visionaries who built more than 50 businesses with over $122 million in annual revenue.
I'm Tiffany Fikes. We've led thousands of people and do it all while being pretty good moms.
And I'm Seychelle Van Poole. We are your podcast to learn how to build big businesses and even bigger lives.
Hi, Empire Builders. Today's episode is a little different than what we had originally planned. And honestly, I'm so grateful it turned out the way it did. As many of you know, Gary Keller has been one of the most influential mentors in my life and business. Over the years, he's challenged me to think bigger, lead better, and redefine what it really means to build not just a big business, but a big life, a healthy life. We sat down with the intention of recording a podcast episode. I came in with questions, I had my agenda, but somewhere along the way, it stopped feeling like an interview and it turned into something a lot more personal. It turned into a coaching session. And we decided not to edit it out. Instead, we're sharing it with you today. Today, you get to listen in as Gary coaches me in real time. I hope as you listen, you don't just hear my conversation with Gary. I hope you imagine that he's asking you the same questions. Pause the episode if you need to. Reflect on your own answers, because that's what great coaches do. They don't just give us answers. They help us think differently. I hope you enjoy this very special episode as much as I enjoyed recording it.
So, Sarah, I'm so excited that we're here today. Thank you so much.
I'm excited to be here. Thank you, Gary.
Oh, man, it's a real honor. So, Sarah, let's dive in.
Yeah.
I want you to sit back for a second. I want you to breathe. And I know this isn't your personality. I know that you're very humble and you believe that great businesses are built by great people. Can you tell us very matter-of-factly exactly what you and your people and the business has accomplished?
The first thing we did was we became number one in one of the most competitive markets that exists, which is the Washington, D.C. metro area. And so we were the first team to cross over 500 sales in 1 year. And then I knew we could even do better. And we doubled it. We doubled the goal. And we were able to crush that goal to where we've been the number one team in Washington, D.C. metro area over the last 10 years. Yep. And then through that, I knew we could duplicate it and impact other communities and other metro areas. And so through that, we became number one in the largest brokerage in America through expansion and growth. And then now we're number five out of all brokerages in terms of number of families served and sales volume. So we did over $1 billion in sales volume each year over the last 3 years. And next year, based on our trajectory and what we know, because our business now is very systematic and predictable, we'll do nearly over $1.5 billion in sales volume next year as well.
Wow.
Yeah. And you know, out of all of those numbers are great. But what I'm most proud of is that our per agent productivity is the highest. Highest on Real Trends, highest in KW. And what it looks like is that, not looks like, what it is that our average agent last year netted right at $150,000 in their bank account last year and ended up serving right under 30 families last year. And so the awesome thing is it's not, we're not just changing a market or we're not just changing because we have lots of people, right? Each person is serving a lot of families and we're able to impact their life and they're impacting our life as well because it's all about serving families at a high volume. So it's not the average, which last year was 2, right, across the industry. You know, an Empower Home agent last year almost served 30 families in 1 year, which is just truly remarkable. But I have to tell you, you know what I'm most proud of? Isn't actually even that. I did say that earlier that I was most proud of, but what I'm most proud of is our give back. Through the work of Empower Home agents and team members, each year we've been giving between $500,000 to $700,000. I'm going to get to my $1 million give back in 1 year very soon. I know it. And that's what I believe. Business is good for the good that it does, right? And to whom much is given, much is required. And it's because of what's been given to me, I feel it's required of us to give back. And so that's what I'm most proud of.
Wow. Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you.
So if you could go back and just tell us about your journey from when you first thought about or got into real estate into where you are today?
Yeah. So the first part really is the foundation of my education, which was learning business. So I went to college and got a business degree and fell in love with business, like all things business. And I was a pretty normal, like, teenager, meaning not knowing what I was going to do. But then once I learned about business, that was what I knew I wanted to do. And so when I graduated from college with a business degree, I didn't know exactly what avenue I was going to follow. But my mom was in the real estate business and she was a realtor with an assistant. And she said, well, why don't you come join me for a couple of years while you figure it out? And so I joined her and I first became a really good agent. I mean, learning the real estate business, and I believe the best agents first learn about the consumer, which the ultimate consumer is the buyer, right? In terms of what buyers are looking for. So I focused on buyers for a couple of years and then really started getting into listings.
And how old were you?
I was 21 when I first got in. Yeah. And became focused on buyers and then really didn't love that. With buyers, you have to be on all the time. When you're good, you know, and I was good. I was a really good buyer's agent. I was with people constantly, and it was draining to me. And I wasn't feeling as challenged and didn't feel like it was for me anymore. So I sat my mom down and I said, I think I'm going to go do a real business. I'm going to go do something else. And she said, no, I think you need to stay. And I think we could build something. You could build something. And we could build a real team. We could build a real business. But to do that, you would have to be in charge of it. You would have to take the reins, which is pretty crazy. At that time, I was 23, 24 years old. And my mom had been in the business 20 years. And she said, you know, she's an amazing entrepreneur, amazing visionary, remarkable realtor. But in terms of the business, in terms of leadership, she didn't see that as her skill set. She saw the opportunity for me to do it. And so she put me in charge, as I like to say. And that was in 2009. And so I was 24 years old. And she said, now to do this successfully, you need to become a listing agent. And I had this limiting belief that I couldn't be a listing agent because I was 24 years old. And I was like, who would trust me with their largest asset, like to sell their largest asset? Who's going to trust me when I'm only 24 years old?
Well, you didn't own a house, did you?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
And so, I was nervous and didn't think. And then, so she's like, you got to get out there. And so she pushed me out there to my first listing appointment. And I remember building our whole process, which we actually still use today.
Really?
Because, you know, my mom was a traditional realtor, like come in with a notepad and a pen and listen. And a lot of her business was past clients and referrals. So the trust was already there, right? But when you come in, you're 24 years old, you have no trust yet. You don't really have much of a track record. I knew that we needed to build some type of process, a conversion process for me to follow when I went in. So I sat her down. I talked about what I should talk about. We built our first listing presentation. Mm-hmm. I built our first listing presentation, which even today, a big part of our listing presentation came that day.
So what you're saying is mom didn't have a listing presentation?
She didn't.
Oh.
No.
She was just good.
Well, she was what I call a traditional realtor, which a traditional realtor, their listing presentations, their CMA, their experience, you know, and they have that. When you're going on met appointments, right, people that know, like, and trust you already, you really don't need a listing presentation because they already know you. They already trust you, right? And so I knew I needed something to show them. And so we built that. I went on my first one, and I got my first high of getting a listing signed. Mm-hmm. And that was fun. The next part of my journey was really taking market share as a listing agent. And so starting to build the business through non-met lead pillars, right? We started our farming newsletter and started getting people calling us, and we were competing against some heavy hitters, names you know. And started winning, and I learned my passion is in listings and taking market share and helping sellers get the most amount of money. And now the foundation of that was, I'm glad that I started as a buyer's agent though, because when you know what buyers are looking for, you are a better listing agent. right?
That's right.
And then during that time, I hired my very first inside sales agent because I wanted to be out there signing listings. And I knew the more listing appointments I went on, the more listings I would sign. And so I hired our very first inside sales agent to book me and my mom appointments and learned very quickly that that's the hardest, I believe, the hardest role on a real estate team is an inside sales agent.
So where did the leads come from that the ISA set appointments from?
Great question. Okay, well, the first place it came from was old leads. Like, my mom had tried lots of different things. And, you know, she's like shiny objects, right? This new lead pillar, this new, not, really buying leads is what she was doing. Mm-hmm. And which we don't do a lot of now, but that's where it started. She had like a ream of paper of old leads. And then the very first system that I put in place when, like she said, let's build something, was our 36 touch. And I read The Millionaire Real Estate Agent once a month because I heard you say the number of times you read it is what grade you're in.
That's right.
And I wanted to graduate as quickly as possible.
Right.
So for 1 year, I read it once a month. And I took one principle at a time. And the first principle was, you know, we have a database. We're not touching them 33 times. I call it 36 because it's way easier to say three times a month. And so we built that. It got our business. So at the time we were doing about 400,000 before the 36 touch. Once implemented, the first year we did almost 800,000. So we almost doubled our revenue. Wow. From just that one
really?
Lead pillar.
Wow.
Yeah. Of it works.
It works.
Yeah. And so leads were coming in through that. And then the second thing that I put in place was targeting non-Mets through a farming area, a geographic farm area, and sending a newsletter once a month, 12 direct, one touch a month. And we started getting leads from that as well. And then, of course, leads on our listings. And so we had some listings at the time. This was during the Great Recession.
No, I understand.
And so we
that's
had
right.
more signs in the yard, less were selling, right?
Yes, that's right.
And so we did some list of foreclosure that worked very well, like free list of foreclosures that buyers wanted.
Right.
That got a lot of leads.
Right.
That was our first low cost lead pillar, right? And so those were some of the things that we were doing. And then our ISA was calling and booking appointments. And if he booked, you know, two appointments a week, that was a win for us at the time. Now our standard is 13 a week. And so that's changed a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah. It was mainly for me and my mom to be meeting with people.
So move me forward in time to when you made the decision that this was a business,
mm-hmm.
right? We talk about the concept of teams. We talk about the individual agents. But you had an epiphany. Something inside of you said, I'm a businesswoman. I'm going to approach it like a business, and we're going to succeed as a business.
Yeah.
So can you talk to us about that journey in your head?
Yeah. I do think I saw it as a business from the time my mom said, like, I want you to lead this. I want you to grow this. Because fundamentally, I think with my education, like with the business education background, like I viewed it as that. Mm-hmm. I think the best businesses solve problems. And I think my answer to your question is more, when did I realize what problem I was solving?
Okay.
In college, we used to do case studies, right? So case studies, right? It's a story of a business. And then with like three questions, what did they do well? What did they not do well? Like, right? What yeah. would you have done different? And I started seeing all of these great agents come into the business. They would show up to classes. They would show up to the market center. They were in the hallway. They would ask me about holding homes open. And they seemed really great, like great people. I would ask them what got them into the business. And they had great stories of why they are doing real estate. And then 6 months later, they were gone. And I started noticing this huge trend of amazing people coming into the business and having a lot of energy around wanting to help buyers and sellers, yeah. and then they would disappear. And so then I started doing my research and I did a case study on the real estate industry.
Wow. Tell me about that.
Yeah. I looked into how many licensed agents are nationwide, how many sales there are, what's the average of a real estate licensee. I then started looking at failure rate, and I learned that our industry has one of the highest failure rates out of any industry, right? Yeah. Depending on the year, you know, and I've tracked it ever since. I've now tracked it like over 15 years. Depending on the year, it's between 80 to 95%.
Don't make it.
Don't make it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're unwilling to do the work.
Yes.
They come in for freedom and flexibility.
They come in thinking it's different than what it is.
Yeah.
And that's what I discovered. What I discovered is they're when I asked them, why'd you get your real estate license? Some will say freedom, right? Some say, you know, I really want to help people. I really want to help buyers. You know, I had a bad experience, or I relocated a lot and it wasn't good, and I want to help people have a better experience, or, you know, no one told me what to do with selling my house, and, you know, I want to help change that, or, you know, like really good reasons.
Sure.
Why they got their license.
Yeah.
But didn't know how to do it. And really, you know, I always joke, but it's like our industry sort of bamboozles people because they think they're getting their license for freedom, flexibility, and to make a lot of money. They think automatically they're going to make a lot of money, and also to help buyers and sellers, right? That's why they think they're getting their license.
Right.
But they're really, to be successful, you got to be a lead generator.
You do. Well, you have to do the work.
Yes.
It is a J-O-B.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's, I agree with you.
Yeah.
That's the main reason why people wash out.
Yes. And most agents, you know, they don't want to do that. They don't want to lead generate. They want to be out there. They want to work with buyers and sellers. They're not scared of working, but they don't want to do the real, like, hard work is the lead generation. Like, that's the hardest because it's rejection after rejection after rejection, right? And so when I realized that I can solve a problem, so the very first agent I hired, we hired her because we had an overflow of business. And you had taught me that, right? That you want to grow from an overflow of business. And so we had an overflow of business. I hired our very first buyer's agent. She was in the industry a year and a half and had served not even two families for the year and a half. And she was about to quit. And she, phenomenal agent, phenomenal, had the right heart, the right values. And we started putting her up to bat on appointments. And within 6 months, she almost made six figures.
Wow.
And she sent me a text message on her way to her very first vacation. This is the day my life changed. This is when I found my purpose, I would say. Like my calling, really. It's a calling for me. And she sent me a text message saying, I'm on my way to my very first vacation. Not only am I paying for me and my husband and me and my husband to go, my parents are coming with me and I'm paying to bring them with me. And that would not be possible if it weren't for you. If it weren't for you and our team, I would be out of the industry. And
wow.
I realized that day wow. that my calling is to help those that have the right heart, that have the willingness to do the work, to serve buyers and sellers, but they need the opportunities. They need the appointment.
Right.
They need the buyer or seller to serve. And so I became literally, like, I've not stopped with that mission.
To generate leads, to create opportunities through appointments?
Yes.
Is that how you would say it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. To generate appointments and to help teach them how to convert appointments, especially appointments that don't know, like, or trust you. Because most of our training in this industry is all around know, like, and trust business. Because that's the majority of what agents do is they work with people they know, right?
Right.
Whereas our model has a lot of non-met, people that don't know, like, or trust. And you have to convert those differently. It's multiple steps. It's not as easy as just going and getting it signed the first time, right? There's a lot of follow-up. You're competing. I mean, my agents compete with 4 to 5 agents at a time on listing appointments.
Right. So the question becomes, the broad question is, so how'd you do it? If you could tell us what you would say are the handful of things that you made a decision about in your business that became the foundational pieces that allowed you and your people to build this magnificent business.
Yeah, I think the first thing that we tackled was really that I focused on becoming a master of is reverse prospecting. So marketing, lead generation, but not necessarily like grunt prospecting, right? Like door knocking and things like that. We focused on messaging to the market, what kind of message would have buyers and sellers raise their hand, and really becoming a master of that first and foremost. And then after we started getting buyers and sellers, mainly sellers, raising their hand, it became a lead conversion game, right? Learning how can we really convert the leads at a high level. And so it was the first part we developed was lead generation, our lead gen department, right? And then through reverse prospecting, through MOFRs. So we make offers for immediate response. And we've got over 39 different lead gen pillars that are organic that we own, that we put out there. So they're not paid for, right? So that was first, but we had to become a master at that. I had to learn to be a marketer. You know, they don't teach you that in real estate school, right? And so that was first. And then it was really building an inside sales department that would take the leads that we're generating and start booking appointments, converting them to appointments at a high level. And not just converting right away to appointments, right? Having those follow-up systems in place, because the stats show that right now it's an 18-month time frame from a time a lead comes in to the time they transact now. It used to be 3 months. And now it's a much longer time frame. So because of that, we've had to have a lot of follow-up systems for when they first raise their hand all the way to where obviously we're transacting with them. And so that was sort of the second phase. With that, the foundation of Empower Home and the predictability of Empower Home, right? We can tell an agent, you know, if you go on this many appointments, if you follow our conversion system, this is how many listings you'll get signed, right? Which will then turn into how many sales you'll have. How that was developed was all in tracking. So the foundation of Empower Home is a lot of numbers, and we have been tracking now for 12 years every big segment of our business every week. And that sort of helped me create a predictable model that agents could join us for, and they would know, okay, if I go on 2 appointments a week, that means I'm going to make 200,000, right? And we literally have it down to the number of appointments they go on because it's that predictable. And so that was a big part of the journey of building it was building the predictability into it. Then after that, I got to become really good at my leadership and attracting leaders and leadership development and hiring and coaching. You know, that came later. A lot of people have asked me, like, did that come first? Like, you started attracting all of these great leaders. And to be honest, it didn't come first. What came first was the predictability and then also the lead gen pillars. And then becoming a master of hiring and attracting great talent. And so those were sort of like the phases of Empower Home. It starts with lead gen, then it started with predictability, well, with conversion, and then growing through finding the right people that match our values and what we're about.
Can I say the quiet part out loud? Success can shrink your circle. Your family cheers you on, your team depends on you, but the decision keeping you awake at 11 o'clock at night, they can't make those for you. So you find a room only to realize you're still the one everyone else is learning from. I've been there, and it's a special kind of lonely. This is not that room. I'm inviting you to join me for next level growth, building beyond 1 million. 2 focused afternoons live on Zoom, intentionally kept exclusive. Bring the decisions you've been circling with for months, put it on the table, and leave with your next move. Learn more and apply at herbestlife.com/NLG.
Tell me the secret of conversion. What advice would you give all of us on the keys to successful conversion?
The first key to successful conversion is to really know the 5 pillars of trust. And the first one is understanding. And honestly, this is what we focus on the most with our agents is reflective listening. A lot of times we go into appointments, you know, agents go into appointments, they think you know what the seller's wanting or you think you know what the buyer's wanting. But the reality is each one is different. They have different problems. They have different things that are keeping them up that night. They have different goals. And so the first pillar of trust is really an understanding. And to do that, you've got to ask really good questions. You've got to reflectively listen to their answers. The second pillar of trust is motive. And so every buyer or seller, when you come in, especially when they don't know, like, or trust you yet, they're questioning your motive, right? They think of a realtor as like we're many times put in the same bucket as car salespeople, right? And so what's your motive? Do you truly want to help them, right? And so following a process of asking questions to show them that your heart is to truly help them and to serve them by listening as well is so critical. And then the third pillar of trust is you need to show them that you have the ability to accomplish their problem, like to solve their problem, right? And so they're questioning, do you have the ability to solve my problem? Like I need to move up when interest rates are a lot higher than the interest rate I have on my home. Do you have the ability to help me, right? And then number four pillar of trust is character. They want to know who they're working with, that you are someone of integrity, that you will do the right thing, that you will put their goals and needs above your own, and showing that your character throughout the process. And then the fifth pillar of trust is your track record. So they need to know you've done it before. So you've shown them that you have the ability, you've shown them that you have the character, but they're then questioning, have you done it before? And showing that you have a track record that you know how to accomplish their goals and help them with their problem. And so when you have those five pillars of trust, and when you really develop them and you develop your skills of showing those five pillars of trust, what ends up happening is conversion then becomes easy.
The question I have is, if I'm not experienced, how do I do the fifth one?
Mm-hmm. We get this question a lot. And the first thing I say is it matters who you're in business with, right? And so our team members, our agents have the track record of Empower Home that's backing them. All of our stats have been tracked year over year. And then they're able to show that our system, our model has the track record to it that's backing them. So it's not what they're doing. It's what Empower Home's track record is, and that they can share that at every single appointment. And so if you're not with someone like Empower Home, you want to align with someone in a company and organization where you can have that track record to back you up.
Where inside your business do you have the handful of non-negotiables that are required, that you believe are required for real estate agents to implement, whether it's their ops people or whether it's them? But what would be those just handful of non-negotiables that you would recommend every real estate agent have if they want to maximize their potential?
The three non-negotiables that all realtors should establish in their business and that we have established at Empower Home is there's got to be a minimum number of conversations that are had every single day. And so you cannot have a business, you cannot serve buyers and sellers if you're not talking with leads. And so making sure that you're having a minimum number of conversations is first. Once you have a minimum of conversations, you then base everything else on your numbers. And so one of our non-negotiables at Empower Home is that we base every decision not on feeling. No decisions are based on feeling. Every decision is based on what the numbers say. What I love about numbers is they don't lie. And so every single Monday, every leader is looking at the numbers from the week prior. And that will tell them the priorities for that week. And so if you're tracking your numbers, right? So once you're having those conversations, you then track, okay, out of this many conversations, I booked this many appointments. Out of this many appointments, I signed this many agreements. Out of this many agreements, I put this many homes on the market. Out of this many homes on the market, I close, right? So many agents make the mistake of how they feel that day. You know, I'm going to lead generate based on how I feel that day. I feel like doing posting on social media, or I feel like door knocking. No, you got to base it on what the numbers say your business needs you to focus on that day. And that's a non-negotiable at Empower Home. The first question I ask a leader when they want something changed is, what does the data say? What does the number say? And many times it trips them up because they're like, and you would think by now they would know, but it trips them up because they're like, I feel this way. No, we don't base decisions at Empower Home on feeling. We base it on what the numbers say. The third non-negotiable that all agents should be following is, this is a skill business. And so you should not be practicing on your clients. If you're practicing on your clients, you will have less clients. You've got to be in rooms where you are practicing conversation frameworks. You're practicing getting better. Not when you're at war, before the battle, okay? And so a non-negotiable at Empower Home is every single day we are practicing, we're practicing conversation frameworks based on what the market is saying they need, the problem that we're solving. And it's every single day is that we're working on our skills. And so that's a non-negotiable that every realtor needs to put in their business right now.
If I wanted to learn the conversations of a great real estate consultant, How would you advise me to do that specifically?
The secret to becoming the best real estate consultant is through open-ended questions. And so the more questions that you ask that are open-ended, the more the buyer or seller is going to be talking. The more they're talking, the more they feel heard. They like you because they're talking a lot, right? And so asking open-ended questions, what, why, how questions, but then you don't just move to the second question, right? You're practicing reflective listening. So reflective listening is repeating back what they said, and then you ask another question based on what they said. So practicing that every single day, open-ended questions, what was the response you got? Then tell me more about that, right? Getting them to talk more. The goal of the conversation, and what I teach our agents every single day, the goal of the conversation is to take it from fact to feeling. So a seller, right, they have a fact that they need to sell their house, and that's factual. Getting them to understand the feeling, their fear, is where you then can actually help and convert them. And you can't do that from just even one question. You've got to go three levels deep on one question. So you ask an open-ended question, they respond, you double down on that. Why is it important to you to be in Florida by May? Why is that important to you, right? They answer you, and then you go another level deep. Tell me more about what that will mean when you pull into the driveway in May. And then they tell you, you know, I'm going to feel like we're closer to our parents, right? And they're not going to miss the memories of summer. And then you're getting to a feeling. They need to move because they need to be closer to their parents so their parents aren't missing those memories with their grandkids, right? And so when you get to the feeling, that's when you can win, right? That's when you can actually serve them. You got to take it from fact to feeling, because humans feel first. That actually is what leads them to take action. But if you can't identify what the feeling is that they're looking for, then it's really hard to get them to take action. And so you got to get them to the feeling, and you got to practice those open-ended questions to get to that.
How do you personally define success, and how has that definition changed from when you first got into real estate?
How I define success is growth. Growth is one of my core values as a human, and growth in terms of, I define growth as progress. Okay. And so year over year, getting better, right? And so if we served 2,500 families last year, we need to at least serve 2,501. And if we don't have some type of growth, then to me, that's not success.
If you succeeded and you lost your family because of it, would you still think that's success?
No, absolutely. I would not think that's success.
Okay. Tell me about that.
So when I say growth, so I gave an example of growth in business, but when I say growth, that also has numbers attached to my personal life, okay, right? So number of date nights with my husband, time spent with my kids. I'm doing once a month one-on-one dates with each of my kids. Like those things, and I'm tracking those on my 411. And so knowing that I'm having growth in that and growing those relationships, like, are we making progress? Are we getting better? And if we're not making progress, that to me is failure, right? But if we're making progress year over year, that's growth. And that's in all segments of my life. That's with my health. That's with my family. That's with my business.
Has that changed over time at all?
It's changed in a big way in my personal life.
Okay.
And so I haven't always measured growth personally, especially with my health.
Okay.
So 6 years ago, I was almost 300 pounds and grossly overweight and didn't make any time for health, no time for exercise. Everything was business. I missed a lot of my kids' bedtimes. My personal life was pretty messy. Mm. The business was growing, but sadly, my physical self was growing too. So that's changed a big part. I have some non-negotiables now with my health. I have some non-negotiables with my family. I'm not going to miss a bedtime. And those are things that didn't exist before. And now it's about not just having a big business, it's about having the big life. And you've taught me that, right? And for years, I sacrificed that big life. And now I'm just not willing to do it.
And you can have both, right?
Yes.
You're experiencing both. What a shock.
At a high level.
Yeah.
And what's sort of the limiting belief I had. I had such a limiting belief around this topic for years, right? Yeah. If I didn't go save the business problem, mm-hmm. then the business would go under in my mind, right?
I think that's natural, by the way.
And I was so fearful that everything was dependent on me and I needed to be the one fixing it. And I had such a big moment, you know, a few years ago when sales sort of halted in the country. You know, I saw so much growth in me because the old Sarah would have gone and just picked everyone's job up and like hunkered us, pushed us through it.
Oh,
like
wow.
That's the old Sarah.
Put it on your shoulders.
Yes.
Carry everybody
yes.
to the finish line.
Yeah.
Celebrate together.
Yeah. And I just said to my circle of strong influences, I said, you know, I'm just not willing to do that anymore. I'm not willing, for the sake of the business, I'm not willing to sacrifice my health or my family. And what ended up happening is we grew and
yes.
my people grew.
Yes.
Because they then became the hero of the growth. It wasn't Sarah.
Right.
They got to step in. You know, for every time we say no to something, like I had to learn this, every time I say no to doing a job that I used to do, it gives someone else an opportunity to say yes. And many times those things are in their joy zone. Like that's what they're so good at. I'm not even that good at it, right? But I felt like I had to do it and I needed to do it. And I've just had so much growth in that area to where I'm not willing to sacrifice my health and my family anymore.
What do you think the highest performers actually understand about focus that most people never get?
I think most people do not get the amount of times you actually need to say no. And so focus is really saying no to a lot of things. And, you know, there's so many great ideas. Like I get hit up with ideas from my team members like every single day, right? And I think I had to grow in like not diminishing their ideas because they were great ideas, but is the timing right? Right. And so I have an idea parking lot that I tell every team member when they bring me an idea. That's an awesome idea. I love that. And right now might not be the right time for us to implement the idea. Because what focus does is, you know, ideas are nothing, right, unless you implement them.
That's right.
Right. And so what is it? Ideas are praise, execution is worshiped.
Yeah.
Right. And so you've got to execute. And so that means you have to say no to the majority of the ideas, no to the majority of the shiny objects, and get used to saying no in a way that feels still good, which, like, I like the way I do it, which is that's a great idea. It's going to go in the parking lot.
Yeah.
And there will be a time that we're going to pull that idea out of the parking lot and we're going to put it on the road, right? We're going to execute
today
it.
It's no.
Yeah. But today, it's just not the right time.
Because we have to focus.
We have to focus on what we're doing right now.
As your success grew, what became more important, talent, systems, or leadership? And why would you say that?
Ultimately, leadership is what became most important. I mean, Empower Home's going to grow to the extent I do, right? And the crazy thing about what we were also just talking about is like, as I became a better mom, as I became a better wife, as I made my health a priority, as I became better personally, my people got better.
Yeah.
The business got better.
You never expected that, did
you?
No. No. None of us do till we journey it.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, it also is such a lesson on your people are going to do more what you show them, way more than what you say to them, right? And so, like, if you look at Empower Home, you know, 7-8 years ago, we were all overweight because they were all a reflection of me. They were all working too much. It was a reflection of me.
Oh, no.
Now you look and it's like everyone's posting their workouts. And I mean, we have a team member that's about to cross 200 pounds lost.
Wow.
And he comes to me and he says, I would not have done it if you didn't show me it's possible.
Is that not crazy? It's the miracle of your business being a reflection of your personal journey.
Yes.
And in your ability to share that journey with others.
Yes.
So they can see a path to their own journey.
Yeah.
Now it's amazing, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. What's amazing about him is that he's having his biggest income year ever. He's going to make over $250,000.
Wow.
And he told me, he said, I didn't believe you when you said the business can, like, my income can still grow and I can make my health a priority. And now he's like saying, guys, this is true. Like you can grow your income and at the same time, make your health a priority. But it's all, I had to demonstrate it to them. It's nothing I could say. They had to see it, right?
Yeah, what's interesting is that I think people, there's a myth out there that is perpetrated by way too many people that success only comes from sacrifice. And the way, by the way, that's not an untruth. The question is the sacrifice your health, your family, your spirituality, and your friends, all of that?
Yeah.
Or is the sacrifice in not doing too much? Yes, yep. Success is built on sacrifice, but you don't get it. It's not sacrificing all the other things that matter in your life. It's sacrificing all the things you could do to focus on what you can do that would have the biggest impact.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, you know, you have a reputation for having both a big heart and high standards. Just curious how you balance that out on a daily basis.
I view those as the same thing, right? I was coaching our leaders about this a couple weeks ago because one of their team members had come into their one-on-one and is going through a divorce. Mm-hmm. And as we know, divorce is one of the hardest things someone goes through.
Yes.
And they wanted to use their one-on-one to talk about all the struggles that they were going through. And they were crying and sharing their pain. And the person, the leader didn't know what to do, right? Other than listen. And we need to listen, right?
Yeah.
But I said to my leader, I said, okay, let me tell you how I would have handled that. How I would have handled that is I would have said, I care so deeply about what you're going through. And I want you to know I want to talk about it. And today, the focus of today is to make sure that the number one stress that people have is their finances, that we don't add that stress on top of the divorce.
Ooh, that's good.
And so my goal today is to make sure that you hit your income goals. And so what I would love to do is focus on you hitting your income goals. We're going to talk about that today. And then I would love to set a time aside to where we can talk about all that you're going through, because I want you to know I'm here for you. And I'm not going to allow you to add financial stress on top of the stress that you're going
through.
That's
cool. That's so good. And that comes from the heart, and yet it still has the standards.
Correct.
I love that.
Yes.
What'd you have to stop doing personally in order for your business to grow to the level that it did?
The first thing is really focusing on my strengths and what brings me joy and creating my sort of perfect job description.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything else that I was doing that wasn't within that mm-hmm. job description, that was now a job description for somebody else.
Yeah.
And so learning how to delegate, learning the things like, what are the things that I really need to do? What are the things that other team members could do? What are the things that we don't even need to do, period,
yeah.
right? A lot
yeah.
of people have on their list things that don't need to get done. And through that, it led me to focus on teaching and coaching. That's where I get the most joy. That's where I can make the biggest impact. And so the day-to-day operational things I'm no longer involved in. And so that has created opportunities for other people to come in and take those roles. And I'm mainly coaching and teaching and being that visionary. And it's a lot of fun.
What would be an example of what you gave up?
One example was I used to have a finance meeting with every location, the partner, the operational leader, and I was the one leading it. I was the one talking through the finances, and we have a finance controller. Why am I the one that's doing that?
I don't know.
And it was literally taking me to go all 10 locations. It was taking me hours a month.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so that's an example of something that I gave up. Anything to do with, we now have an HR department, which I don't love, but our size requires it. I used to have to sit through HR stuff, and now I have someone that's doing that. And
you found people that probably do it better.
Yeah, way better, way better. Because what I learned is to, you know, it's one thing to build a business. It's another thing to protect the business mm-hmm. once it's built, mm-hmm. right? And a lot of things can destroy a business once it's built, right? And it's all
usually it's the entrepreneur that destroys their own business.
Correct.
Because they won't delegate.
They won't delegate, and entrepreneurs work in the gray. Whereas when it comes to a lot of things that destroy businesses, they're either black or white, hmm. right? And so I like to work in the gray. And so legal stuff, HR things like are very black and white. And so putting a leader in place that thought more black and white is how we started growing versus growing again, which is before I was trying to lead that black and white, but I was failing because I'm just more of a gray thinker.
I get it, by
yeah.
the way. Yeah, thank you. So what's something you believe about building a great real estate business that you think the industry gets wrong? What would be that thing?
This idea that you're going to grow by just like recruiting and then collecting agents' database, and then that's going to provide enough value for them to stay long-term. Like that's they're getting that wrong. It's foundationally not part of MRA. right? Meaning like you want to grow from an overflow of business. So focusing on, it's still a lead gen game. No matter what level you're in, whether you're Sarah Reynolds level, whether you're just starting, it's a lead generation business. And so when you get distracted from that, and so many people do, especially right. when they start growing, they think they no longer have to lead generate. I mean, when I see a problem in my business, like my team will tell you, I get on the phones, I hear from buyers and sellers, and I quickly figure out what the problem is. Mm. And it's you cannot be what my meemaw used to say, Sarah, she would say, Sarah, don't get too big for your britches. Mm. And a big mistake I see the industry make is we get too big for our britches way too fast. We stop doing the things that led to our success, which for all of us is lead generation. And we get further and further away from it. And then it starts dwindling. And so that's a big, big thing that the industry gets wrong.
What would you say the handful of challenges you face today?
It's in me. Like meaning I know that the growth of Empower Home, like I will either, if I'm growing as a person, if I'm growing in my health, if I'm growing even at home, right? It transcends to growth at Empower Home. And so I realized a couple years ago that Empower Home is going to be capped. The growth of Empower Home is going to be capped at my leadership lid. So if I'm not growing, if I'm not getting better, if I'm not coachable myself, right, in terms of the blind spots that I have, then I'm going to cap our growth. And so the biggest hurdle I have is making sure that, yes, we've been able to build this amazing empire, but to stay humble, to stay coachable, to realize there's a lot of growth in me that I need to overcome to where I can stay a couple steps ahead of my amazing people, right? Because they're looking to me to help them grow. And to really build a vision to where they can see their life and their goals inside of that. And I do believe we have that vision, right? And so my vision is to be in 100 major metro cities, serving 100 families a month, to then give back $1 million to worthy causes in each of those cities and communities.
That's a big deal.
It is.
That's a really big deal.
It is.
Last question. When life gets hard, and it does for all of us, by the way, what keeps you grounded and keeps you moving forward?
So I've got a couple things that I do when life gets hard. And honestly, life is hard every day, right?
Yeah,
there's a verse in the Bible that says there's few days without trouble. And boy, is that true.
I don't know those days.
Yeah, seriously. And so when I'm having a hard day and when you're leading a big business, big life, you have a lot of hard days. There's a couple things. I have a feel-good folder on my phone. So when someone sends me a text message, you're in there multiple times, like a text message of something I've done to impact their life or a more big thinking type of message, it goes in my feel-good folder because and then I pull it up. And some weeks it gets pulled up every day.
Wow.
And I start reading if I were to give up, because normally when we have those hard days, you know, what are your options? Well, you could give up. You could keep going, right? What options do you have? And for me, I want to keep the mission going. I want to keep going. And how I do that is I focus on what I have done, what impact I have made, whose life have I changed? And if I can read that and I could say, like, what would happen? You know, there's another Kanwar. There's another Rima. There's another Jen. There's other people that need me to help impact their life, to help them lead a big, big life, right? And if I give up now, then potentially I'm not going to be used in that way, right? And so like making sure I'm reminded of the difference I have made is a big way. And then keeping long-term thinking, mm-hmm. You know, we can get so in the weeds in this business, you know, growing a business is so hard, is hard and challenging. I've never had a perfect week. Ever. Yeah. The numbers have never been perfect in every category. It just doesn't happen.
No.
Right. And making sure that I'm thinking, like playing the infinite game, right? Thinking long-term. And, you know, this is a short-term problem. And is that short-term problem worth our mission not being accomplished? It's not worth it.
It's not worth it.
And so let's tackle it. Let's figure it out. And let's keep going. And so thinking long-term and keeping that mission in front of me.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not Keller Williams Realty, LLC and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information.